Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.5 in the Matsu Valley, radiofreepalmer.org, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Dog Works Radio. You can get all of our up-to-date information there as well as listen to all of our podcasts. Tonight on the show, we have Daniel Anker. He is the filmmaker of Icebound. It is a film about the Serum Run. If you know anything about mushing, you know what the Serum Run is all about. Icebound is going to premiere this weekend on Friday at 8 p.m. down at the Anchorage Film Festival at the Beartooth Theater at 8 o'clock. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. I know you and I spoke, a couple of months ago on our sister show, The Sci-Vibe, with Dorothy Wills Raftery, and it's good to have you back on. Of course, I am passionate about mushing and everything about the Serum Run and everything that happens with that in history. So I'm looking forward to talking to you this evening. If you could, Daniel, introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you're all about.
Sure. I'm Daniel Anker. I'm a documentary filmmaker. I do primarily historical films, and this particular one we've been working on for almost a decade, actually.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So what attracted you? You know, everybody kind of knows the story, at least a smidgen of it if they follow American history, but what attracted you to this story in particular?
It's just a perfect story for this kind of documentary treatment. It's not only has, you know, it's this great adventure story in itself, but it has so many different threads and tangents that tie into larger context in American history, and that just is what makes for good films, a small narrative from which you can tell bigger stories. I felt that this was something that, in particular, that I would be able to get funding from the National Endowment for the Humanities, which in the end did turn out to be our major sponsor of the film. So that's essentially it.
So if you can give us a little bit of a recap, at least from your understanding of the history, the Serum Run, you know, they delivered the serum to Nome hoping to save a whole bunch of lives, and then, of course, a dog or two made history. Is that about it, or is there a lot of backstory there?
There's a lot of backstory. That's kind of a funny capsule. Most people listening, I suppose, to this station will know that there was a dog sled relay that took 5.5 days, and it was involving many mushers and many, many dogs. There are lots of facts that people aren't aware of, erudite Alaskans who know their own history. There are little nuggets of the story that are rarely told and little known, and one of the things that the film does is kind of bring that up. And for example, the fact that there was more than one Serum Run. There were three batches of serum. There was a batch of serum that was in Nome at the time that the first cases were diagnosed, and this was a small batch of serum that was not enough for more than a handful of people, and it also had expired, and the doctor was afraid to use it, although he eventually did. And then there's the Serum Run that most people are aware of, which went from that was a batch of serum found in Anchorage at the railroad hospital there, that went by train to Nanana and then down the trail by dog team relay to Nome over 5.5 days, and that's the one that had Cephala and Togo and Balto and Kassin and the well-known mushers. But also almost 20 mushers who are little known were participants in that relay. And then, in fact, there was concern that that was not enough serum. And there was another batch of serum that came in from Seattle and was mushed the same route by a whole different set of mushers, some of the same ones, but some different mushers. And so in all, there's, I believe, 34 men and one woman who mushed the serum run, and several hundred dogs.
The third one that you just mentioned, Daniel, was that shortly thereafter? I mean, within days of that second batch being delivered?
Yes, it was maybe a little over a week. I can't quite remember the exact date, but I think something like February 8th or something. And the first batch got there on the 1st.
So this was kind of the golden age of carrying supplies by dog sled. You know, that used to be the old mail routes and how they would get information down the trail, so to speak. So this was nothing spectacular in terms of the mushers' perspective. They were just doing their job, weren't they?
Yes, and you're exactly right. And one of the things that the film explores is why this event that is, it's extraordinary in many ways, but it's also ordinary for the people and places of Alaska at the time, and how this event became a cause célèbre nationally and a legend. And a lot of that has to do with the newspapers at the time. But yes, in fact, dog team rescue was not uncommon and was to be expected at the time, as was epidemic. This was in some ways a smaller epidemic by magnitudes of the epidemics that had hit that region and other regions in previous years.
You know, I can't help but think that that diphtheria was probably a pretty widespread problem in the early 1900s. I just wonder why this story caught so much attention. I'm sure that there was epidemics in remote Maine, maybe, or in the deep South. I just wonder why this one was so special. Was it because of the distance that they traveled, or the way that they traveled, or the folks that spoke about it in the newspapers? What do you think was the big draw, of course, other than it being Alaska?
Well, I think the convergence of several things. I mean, one thing that shouldn't be overlooked is the way that the serum was relayed by multiple mushers. That is very unique.
It
that
is.
Was extraordinary, and that was record-setting in the time that it took to do the run. I mean, the mail run took 30 days or something of that nature, and this took 5.5 days. So that was pretty extraordinary. But I think that it was a sort of perfect storm culturally for this story to take hold. I mean, in popular culture, the far north captured the imaginations of people in the lower 48 in the decades previous to the serum run. And there were movies about dog mushers in the theaters even at that time. And there's lots of dime novels. There's a whole, genre, literary genre, books of that ilk. So this was something that people had a fascination with, and it also fit the times in terms of the media. The tabloid newspapers, which took the story and ran with it, were in their heyday. And, I mean, many, many millions more newspapers in circulation than there are today.
Right.
And this story fit perfectly because it was serialized. It went day by day by day, and people could follow it every day and buy more newspapers every day to see how the story played out.
Daniel Anker is our guest today on Mushing Radio. Icebound is the name of the film. He is the filmmaker of that documentary. It will air this Friday at the Beartooth as part of the Anchorage Film Festival. It's an annual event downtown. I've been to several of them here in the last few years that I've lived here, and it's a very cool way to showcase a film. So I'm looking forward to at least promoting that a little bit here on the show. IceboundFilm.com is the website, and make sure you sign up for our mailing list that is right there on the website to get up-to-date information. Daniel, if we can spend a few minutes talking about making the film, who you guys spoke with, maybe a story or two that may not be in the film of one of the family members of the Mushers, of Days Gone Past. What was something interesting that you guys found out, you know, talking to all these folks?
Oh, well, there's so much to me that was fresh that I tried to put in the film from this. And you know, we did try initially to reach as many people who were of an age where they were alive at the time, which means people in their 90s for the most part. And there's great stories to come from that, many of which didn't make it in the film. But one of the things that's interesting to me about all of these stories put together is the degree to which oral history played a role in this story, as well as, you know, sort of the other half of the tabloid media, along with tabloid media, of why this story is legendary. It's because it held a special place in the families and villages where it took place, and the people who took part. And a lot of the details of each person's run are not written down in any history book. They're just known by the family members. And that was quite poignant at times to hear those stories.
And if I remember correctly, I was able to watch a preview of the film before you were on the Sci-Vibe. There's a very interesting story about the doctor, isn't there?
Well, he's an interesting character. You know, he's, I think if there's one thing that our film, more than anything else, debunks, it's the notion of the unqualified heroism of the doctor.
Right.
And I don't want to undermine what Dr. Welch was going through at that time, or the hardship of any doctor who spent their life in the town of Nome and the surrounding villages as the only doctor in town. I mean, that is in itself heroism. But you know, there is a lot of confusion among the records of this doctor as to who was sick and when and how they were treated. There's some record-keeping that seems to be covering one's tracks, where he diagnosed some earlier patients as tonsillitis and then went back and revised the diagnosis. There's a lot of, seems to be on his part, uncertainty about whether it merits the attention that it was getting, and whether the second relay, for example, was necessary, and he went back and forth on that issue. It's not so cut and dried as to what his ultimate status is in the story. At least the heroism that he has come to be known, with which he has come to be known, I question that a little bit.
You know, Daniel, the Iditarod itself kind of pays homage to the Serum Run. It follows a lot of the same route, and it takes part as kind of a commemorative to this. What type of research did you do about the history of mushing as a sport in relation to this, or did you do any at all?
Well, it was an important part of the story. And an important part of understanding where the Serum Run and the modern-day Iditarod, how they intersect one another. Cephala was a champion racer, and he was a champion racer because of the culture of dog sled races in Alaska at the time. The All Alaska Sweepstakes is the most well-known of those. And that's a fascinating period of history that's little known. I mean, there were races all over the country that were followed in the newspapers, especially the ones up in Nome. I also did a great deal of research to try to figure out what the connection is between the Iditarod and the Serum Run, and the connection, as I think the organizers of the race itself will tell you, is a tenuous one, that the Iditarod is not run specifically to commemorate the Serum Run. It's run to commemorate an era in the history of mushing, that same era that Cephala came out of, and that same era in which mushing was a life-saving endeavor and necessary for subsistence and all of that, and the Serum Run is the best example of that. But there's so many more examples of that, and certainly the sport aspect of it. There, the races are in some ways more connected. The early races more connected to the Iditarod than actually the Serum Run is.
You know, what I find interesting, Daniel, are some of the characters that took part in the relay. When you think about guys like Cephala and Wild Bill Shannon, they are kind of the cowboys of the day. They kind of remind me of those old Western movies and the stories that I've heard about some of these folks. Anything you can share about things you heard about some of those guys down the trail?
Well, just the kind of thing that you were just, you know, talking about. I mean, you would have a great radio show by interviewing people who live along the Yukon who are in their 80s and 90s and asking them to talk about that generation of musher. I mean, one person who's in the film who talks about it a little bit, George Atla, is just obviously a legend in himself, but he knew those guys and he knew that generation. He comes right out of that era. And it's not just the Cephalas and the Wild Bill Shannons of the world, the ones that are best known, but, you know, a guy from Caltech named Jack Screw, or Jack Nikolai was his name, equally kind of known for their personalities and their mushing and so forth. So it is like the Wild West. It was like the Wild West, and
in many ways it still is. It's very remote, very hard to get to. You have your characters that are performing their task, whatever that is, whether it be mushing as a sport or trapping or whatever they're doing, fishermen or hunters or whatever. Daniel,
right.
Are you traveling up to Alaska to attend the premiere?
Yeah, I'll be there. I'm leaving tomorrow.
Are you guys doing the standard Q&A afterwards, or is it just a screening, or what's the deal?
I think there's a Q&A, but also the audience will be pretty special that evening. I know of at least 30 descendants of the original mushers who are coming into town for the premiere, and also the last surviving diphtheria survivor, a woman who was a child at the time and had diphtheria, and she's going to be there as well. So it's going to be a pretty special night.
So when you first started on this project, you said it's been over a decade in the making. What was your intention? Is it just, as a filmmaker, just to tell the story and, you know, hope it grabs hold? Or what was kind of going through the back of your mind when you finally said, you know what, it's done, let it roll?
Well, it's a specific kind of film, and the funding that I referenced earlier from the NEH, the National Endowment for the Humanities, has a certain kind of mandate, and that is that it be a kind of definitive telling of the story, thoroughly researched and authentic in every possible way. I mean, it's not we did it at a time when people were still living, and many of those in the film are unfortunately no longer with us. And it's not something that can be done again.
Right.
I made the film knowing that this had a sort of special place. You know, documentary, in the kind of the truest way, a document of this event that not only tell an entertaining story, but that could sort of enlighten people about the times and about the era and about the story that many people think they know well that maybe don't know as well as they thought.
You know, what I found most intriguing about the film, Daniel, was it was pure. You know, today you see on every channel on cable, a story about us living in rugged Alaska, whether it be the crab fishermen or the ice road truckers or the Yukon people or whatever. All of it is so dramatized, but a documentary like yours was just so pure, so refreshing, such a great way to tell the story of an event that really shaped our state and kind of, at least in a mushing sense, our livelihood and what we do and why we do it.
That's very gratifying to hear you say that. That was certainly the intention.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it again. I hope to come on down at least at one of the showings this weekend. But I can't say enough. If you guys have not seen this film, and I don't think very many people have, you need to get out and check out this film for sure. Because if you're a fan of mushing and you think, like Daniel said, if you think you know the story of the serum run, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised at what they put together on Icebound. Mike, my last question to you, Daniel, I know that you're traveling tomorrow up here to Alaska, is how many times were you on the back of a dog sled while making this film, if at all?
Well, that's a tricky question because I'm kind of embarrassed to say to your listeners that I neglected to jump on the sled until the very last day of shooting, the very last minute. We were out with Aaron Burmeister, who did a lot of the mushing for us, and I realized that my kids would never forgive me if I came back and had not been on a sled, and so I jumped on a sled with Aaron, actually. I didn't mush myself. So I still have yet to experience the thrill of mushing.
Well, the invitation is out there. You're welcome to come up to our kennel this weekend, and I'll give you a ride.
That would be great.
Very good.
Thanks so much.
Daniel, anything else you want to share? I know we mentioned the website, iceboundfilm.com. It's going to premiere this weekend starting Friday at 8 p.m. at the Beartooth. Everybody that's in Anchorage knows about the Beartooth and what it's all about. Anything else you want to share before we go?
Yeah, you know, actually, I don't know if I mentioned this in the previous interview I did with you guys, there's a classic book that some of your listeners will be aware of called The Race to Nome, which is by a man named Kenneth Ungerman, who is really the only person who wrote about this story, who researched it at the time when participants were living. He wrote this book in the late 50s, early 60s, and it came out in 1963. It's a kind of short nonfiction book, and it's being re-released with the film.
Wow.
Or to tie into the film. And the first part of that will be a Kindle or iBook edition, electronic, I guess you call it, edition, hopefully by Christmas time. And it's a great read and a very fast read. I'm really proud that we were able to sort of resurrect that book, because it's really a classic that needs to be out there again.
When is the film going to be released on DVD or Netflix or all the other media that's out there? When can folks be able to see it for themselves after this film festival circuit and that sort of thing?
All right. Well, those kinds of things sometimes take a long time, and this is really the first step, this Alaskan premiere. So we hope to the film is going to be also released in Juneau, at the Goldtown Theater the 12th, December 12th.
The following week then, yes.
The following week. And then there's going to be a little bit of a break, and then hopefully it'll be released by Iditarod time in other cities, and then eventually on television and on DVD and so forth. But it's a slow process. Internationally, if any of your listeners are international, the BBC has a version of the film. It's a shortened version, but it's a very compelling version of the film that is going to be aired on BBC4. Supposed to be this fall, but they postponed it, so I don't know exactly when, but I think early next year. And then French and German television also will be airing it.
Well, icebound film.com is the place, and as we mentioned at the top of the show, make sure you sign up for that mailing list and you can find out if, in fact, it's going to air at a festival near you. There's film festivals all over the place, so it could be on the schedule. You never know. And, of course, on that list, I'm sure you guys are going to release when it's time to come out on DVD or, as you mentioned, possibly PBS or something of that nature, right?
Yep. We'll let you know.
Very good. Daniel, we're just about out of time. Take care on your travels up here to Alaska. It's quite cold here in Palmer. We're at about -4 right now, so dress warm on your way up.
Okay, I will do.
Daniel Anker, a filmmaker for Icebound, is going to premiere this Friday at the Beartooth, 8 p.m. If you are a Serum Run fan or a Mushing fan in general, and you're anywhere in our listening audience, make sure you check it out. Daniel, we'll talk again soon, okay?
Yeah, thanks so much, brother.
Thank you. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.